This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, along with my co-host, Phil Horegi with Saver Systems, and David Taylor with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. And we're proud to be broadcasting today's show from Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. We have a great lineup of guests on our show for you today, including Louis Matrone, who's the president and COO of IMC, Daryl Britt, the founder and president of Aprio, Tim Ross, partner Mid-Atlantic Regional Tax Services leader with a company called Clifton & Gunderson, and finally Julie Hassett, who's a partner with Hassett and Willis & Company. First up is a young man by the name of Louis Matrone, who's the president and COO of IMC. What is IMC, Louis?
IMC is a management consulting firm founded in 1981 by Sudhakar Shenoy. We have close to 400 employees that are specialized in enterprise content management and healthcare services.
So there are a lot of management consulting firms out there. What do you think makes yours special?
Well, as I mentioned, we have specialized consultants who work for us in niches that we feel are important to us. Being a small company, we have to pick and choose very wisely in where we approach and go after business. What we have done is specialized in enterprise content management, and we bring services to our clients that help them save money. We stay current with the technologies like cloud computing, mobile apps, and we work with them side by side to help them automate their workflows and their processes to save them money. In today's environment, that's more important than ever.
Right. When did you join the firm?
I joined the firm in June of 2000.
June of 2000. And why were you the ideal pick at the time?
Well, I don't know that I was the ideal pick. You have to ask Sudhakar Shenoy.
Well, he's a smart guy. Why do you think he picked you?
Well, I think IMC at that point was growing. They were coming out of a small business category and needed to get to a point where they could compete in the open market. I had, prior to IMC, been with EDS 22 years, worked in all the various disciplines of sales and marketing, operations. And I think Sudhakar, who knew me for several years, felt that I could bring some of that discipline and the bigger company processes to bear on IMC.
So after 22-some-odd years at EDS, why make the change? Why leave after such a successful career there?
Well, interestingly enough, if it was left up to me, I may still be at EDS. Sudhakar knew my wife, and Sudhakar is quite the charmer, and she was always impressed with Shenoy. So it took 3 months of discussions before I finally talked to my wife and said, you know, Sudhakar's really wanting me to join his company. And so she said that you really should think about doing that, and I suggest you do it because you always wanted to be an entrepreneur. My father was an entrepreneur, and it was a risk, but manageable risk, because it was a company that had been around for many years. It was small. It allowed me to do some of the things that I always wanted to do being with a big company, but bureaucracy would get in your way and you couldn't make all the decisions.
Yeah, but not everybody's successful going to full and open competition. Why were you?
Well, I think that I want to believe that the good guys in this business can still win. And I think it was IMC is made up of wonderful individuals, a lot of great people, some that were there before I came, some that have come since I joined. But we've all been together for a long time, and I think we do our jobs independently very well. And it's important that the clients see that. And so the work that we do with our clients is very good. We have a tremendous delivery track record, and we're able to act big but maneuver very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the entrepreneurial thing. Where did that begin for you?
Well, it started with my first mentor. I've had three. My first mentor was my father, and he moved his family from Brooklyn, New York, to Pensacola, Florida in 1954, which was where I was born a couple years later. I spent my entire youth watching my father work very, very hard. I got to only see him Saturday mornings, Sundays, when he was off. The rest of the time, he was working. However, he was my biggest fan. He would show up at key events, sporting events that I had. And if he couldn't, he'd call me and let me know, wish me well. But he had that passion and work ethic that really he instilled in me at a very early age, which kind of spawned some of my desire to get out there and do things.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the other two mentors.
Well, the other two mentors were within EDS. One was the individual who actually hired me. He was a friend of my brother's who introduced me to EDS. I had an accounting degree. He was the comptroller. So obviously, wow, that's where I want to aspire to be, is where you are. And he took me under his wing and really helped show me some of the ropes, talked about business, and inspired me actually to move out and do other things. I had an accounting degree, but it really wasn't something that excited me day to day. It was those people that were working with the clients that seemed to be having the fun.
Yeah, and the third mentor?
The third mentor was an individual. He was actually my first account manager out in the field when I got my opportunity to move out and work with the clients. He interviewed me, and the first thing he said to me is, I don't know a whole lot about accounting, and I was going to support his accounting and financials out in the field. He said, I don't know a lot about accounting, but I can promise you I'll know if something's not going right, and I'll know more about accounting than you'll ever want me to know. And it kind of woke me up to the fact that this is a guy that's going to let me do my job, and if I do my job well, he will stay out of my way.
We hear this mentorship a lot on the show. What do you think those three mentors, well, the two, not including your father, saw in you that they felt it was worth their time and effort to take you under their wing? What is it about you?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, my father had a lot of passion for his work, and that's how I looked at my work, whether it was collecting receivables, balancing a bank book. I got very lucky to get involved in some special projects when I first joined. And I think that in the case of the comptroller, he saw me put in the extra hours without being asked. He saw me there on weekends and saw that I wasn't just clocking in and clocking out at 8 and 5. And I took it very seriously. I tend to be loyal.
Right.
I joined EDS to be my career.
Right.
IMC came along later, but I think that they saw that.
Yeah. David?
Well, you were at EDS. I understand that two of the employees of EDS were taken as hostages in the Iran hostage crisis, and that Ross Perot instilled some of that loyalty. Could you tell us something about that?
You bet. Ross was kind of the overall mentor for all of us, and mentors to me are voluntary. You don't have a mentor program and say, you need to go mentor this guy. It needs to happen naturally. And in the case of Ross, he led by example. And I think his mother's quoted in the book On Wings of Eagles that talks about the prisoners, is that he had a responsibility to his employees, and he took that a little bit further than I think most owners or chairmen would, in that he physically went over and actually gave the underwear that he was wearing as long johns to one of the prisoners who happened to have the flu, who happens to be a very close friend of mine today. And had it not been for things like that, he could have died of pneumonia in the prison, or he may never have gotten out if Ross wouldn't have organized this team. And I was fortunate enough to see it closer than most. I worked in the accounting department, and we had to do a lot of things to fund the program. So I was able to see it a little bit closer and know a little bit more about what was going on than the average employee. But every step of the way, Ross set the tone. He set the example, and he made us very proud to be there. And that was just one example of what EDS did for its employees at that time.
So how did the privilege of being a part of that moment in time influence you in the way that you lead today?
Well, I want to say that I'm very passionate, and I believe in a win-win for an employee that joins your company and for an employer that hires an employee. It's got to work for both. And that means that you just can't expect somebody to work 12 hours a day and not in return be sensitive to their family life. And when I talk to my leaders and I give them their performance review, one of the things that I talk about is balance in life. And that while I want you to work hard, don't forget your family. If you go on vacations, don't forget that you have an obligation to spend time with them. Don't spend all your time on your laptops. Now it's so easy to get access to your work that you can find yourself spending a lot of time in the condos on the beach or whatever doing work and not spending time with your family.
You have a very personal experience with work-life balance in the form of your brother. Say a little bit about that.
Well, my brother, I'm the youngest of four, and my brother passed away when he was 50. He's the second oldest brother, I'm 11 years younger than him. So it was at a time where I was getting to the point where I wasn't as active physically. I wasn't taking care of myself as much as I should. I was working long hours. I was flying and traveling. And it just woke me up to the fact that I needed to take care of myself so that I could be there for my family,
right,
and not leave my granddaughter without a grandfather at too young an age.
Great. What's the website address, Lewis, for IMC?
The website is www.imc.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Lewis Matrone, who's the president and CEO of IMC. I'd like to thank my co-host, Phil Horegi with Saber Systems, and David Taylor with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is
Sophie Pyle.
And Sophie, who are you with?
I am with Vox Worldwide.
What is Vox Worldwide?
Vox Worldwide is my company. I do social media maintenance for a variety of different clients. Right
social
now,
media maintenance. What the heck is that?
Yes. So maybe a company doesn't want to have their marketing person working full time on their Facebook and Twitter accounts, which are very important today that every business have one. So what I do is I maintain their Facebook and Twitter accounts and also try to optimize other tools so that they are getting the most out of today's social media programs.
How long have you been in business?
I've been in business since I graduated college in 2009, and it's been booming. People love the internet.
You started a business right out of college?
Yes.
How's it going?
It's going well. It took a lot of struggles in the beginning, but I learned a lot. It's hard having your own business.
Is there a particular success story you can reference?
Yes. My biggest client acquisition yet so far has been guestofaguest.com, which is owned by Cameron Winklevoss of the famous Winklevoss twins, and Rochelle. She's a wonderful boss up in New York is where it's grounded, but I'll be doing a lot of coverage of Fashion's Night Out tonight in Georgetown, so I'm really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Why should companies be considering social media as a part of their strategy?
It's another excellent marketing tool that's relatively inexpensive. It can be free if you have the right tools and the right things in place, so something that every business should have.
Uh-huh. And if someone wanted to get a hold of you, how could they reach you?
They can reach me at Vox Worldwide, VOXWorldwide.com.
Great. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is we've been speaking with Sophie Pyle, who's the CEO of Vox Worldwide, and this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, along with my co-host, Phil Horegi with Saber Systems, and David Taylor with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. Joining us for this segment is a young man by the name of Daryl Britt, who's the founder and president of a company called Aprio. What is Aprio, Daryl?
Aprio is a 13-year-old management consulting and systems integration firm that primarily services the federal government. We've got three primary market areas: electronic health records for disaster management, emergency response program management support, and then financial and performance management.
Great. And how big or small are you guys today?
Aprio has about 60 employees today.
60 employees, 13-year-old company.
Yeah.
And in the green room, you describe yourself as a boutique player.
We're boutique because we've got very well-defined market niches. And the company has always pursued a strategy of keeping these niches and not expanding into areas that we don't have expertise.
Why was that a good decision at the time?
I think at the time it was based around my background more than anything else. And frankly, it's probably a great decision at this point in the marketplace, given that the budget climate that we're in.
Right. I mean, when you're starting out a company, how were you able to resist any temptation that was outside the core businesses that you wanted to be in?
Actually, it's difficult. And frankly, I think over the 13 years, we've learned to stay close to our niches. There have been one or two times over, of course, the lifetime of the company that we have started to veer away. But I think ultimately, you come back to what you're good at.
Uh-huh. Why start the company in the first place?
Actually, it was the second company that I was part owner in. There were a series of companies that I had before up in Pittsburgh with another mentor of mine. And for personal reasons, I moved back to the D.C. metropolitan area.
Say something about the mentor.
The mentor was an individual that I had worked with at my prior employer. I worked for one of the Big Eight management consulting firms. He had left. He was a mentor to me at that organization. So when he left, I had the opportunity a year later to go and join him and to start a series of three companies in Pittsburgh.
We'll say something about the three companies.
The companies were all doing systems work in the public health sector. Specifically, we were doing healthcare recoveries, going back and identifying where healthcare players, public sector, Medicaid and Medicare, had paid claims in error.
Mentors see something special in a person that they're willing to mentor. What do you think your mentor saw in you?
I would probably say it's my work ethic, and then how I treated individuals, people around me, the staff, other individuals in the organization. I think that combination of the two, I think he thought I had an ability to get people to work and really provide their best effort in our organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about growing up. Where are some of the roots of your entrepreneurialism come from?
Well, I'm a Philadelphia boy by native, and my parents, who split up when I was about 13 or 14, my father was actually an entrepreneur. He worked in corporate America for about 20 years and then hung out his own shingle. So I probably get it naturally, frankly.
Talk about growing up in Philadelphia. What was that like?
Modest beginnings, you know. Frankly, we were probably lower middle class or upper lower class, however you want to call it. And frankly, we worked pretty hard. Even when my parents split up, myself and my sisters, we all got jobs so that we could make ends meet.
What were you doing?
I worked at a pharmacy through most of middle school and high school.
So what were you like as a kid?
Quiet, introverted. You know, sit down and do a lot of work on my own, trying to figure things out on my own.
So how does that equate into a successful entrepreneur?
I think I still have an innate ability to just work hard to solve problems and try to figure out what's the next step I need to take in the company. I've probably changed from that introvert background to a little bit of an extrovert. You have to do that, obviously.
It sounds like with a niche that you have and not growing too far, there's like a real sense of balance about you, you know, like work-life balance, and then finding the right balance between growing too fast and staying in your niche. You know, is that something that you think comes from your childhood roots, like maybe the difference between the personalities of your parents?
Yeah, I would say so. My dad was that extrovert. He was the guy out there trying to, set the world on fire. My mother was the 35-year teacher in Philadelphia. So he was risky. She was conservative. I think I'm somewhere in between. So I think that balance is there naturally.
So you were successful in Pittsburgh. You were running three businesses. Why'd you stop?
Personal reasons. My children from my first marriage were here in the D.C. metro area, and I had the opportunity to come back and get custody of them. So I did. So I left the businesses up there to come back here to my kids.
Uh-huh. And you were a single parent raising your kids on your own and starting another business?
I was remarried, and my wife and I relocated from Pittsburgh in a very short amount of time and came down. She helped take care of the kids while I went back to Pittsburgh for the first year. And then after that point, I ended up starting Apria.
What would you like to say to her now, looking back on that bit of support?
She's an angel, frankly. Okay. You know, she's the partner in Aprio that really doesn't exist other than her.
Yeah.
Yes.
You said that to you, it's all about people and relationships. Why?
Any successful organization, whether it's the federal government or a business, is only as good as the individuals that work there day in and day out. I think Aprio has been successful because we try to find a marriage between the personal and professional interests of our employees and really what Aprio needs to do to succeed. And we talk about that openly.
You had said earlier that there were three attributes that you look for in these employees. What are they?
Integrity, humility, and intelligence, and probably in that order.
Integrity, humility, and intelligence. Mm-hmm. How do you know when you see it?
I'm not sure I can quantify that yet. That's something I think I have to think about going forwards, but I think a lot of it comes through the interview process. We end up talking to multiple individuals, and I think I'm always the last person in the interview process. I'm Mr. Fit. You know, I look for that. I look for those combinations in individuals.
So you still interview every applicant that comes in through the door?
I interview every applicant that comes in through the door.
How big do you get before the boutique thing that you're so proud of is at risk?
It's a constant struggle. I'd like to say that I can get to, you know, four or five times by, instead of growing larger vertically, really going horizontal and trying to duplicate the model several times over, being keenly sure that the leader of each of those groups, it has the same integrity, humility, and intelligence, and that they're very, very strong at promoting that through their group.
It sounds to me like you're constantly learning as a leader in this business. What's the next challenge you think you're going to have to face and do well?
I love learning, first of all. I think that's the key to life, personally. I think the challenge really has to do with the growth that you mentioned a second ago. And trying to continually promote that culture of the organization as you get larger. It's hard to be there every second of the day.
Yeah. What would you say, looking back on it, is the most difficult thing you've ever accomplished?
It may be personal, and it's probably that relocation to come down here and be in my kids' uh-huh. lives from my first marriage.
What was difficult about it?
It put a lot of stress on myself and my wife in order to do that, but I think it was tantamount in my kids' life. They had to understand that I was going to come down and try to make a difference in their lives.
Okay. I suppose it probably could have been much easier for you to come down to D.C. and just get a job. You wouldn't have had the stress of a startup, but it was important for you to really try to make both work.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I think that's a good point. I think there's a again, trying to also show my kids that you can try to do both things. You can take care of your family and try to take care of some of your personal interests.
So not accepting what we call self-limiting behaviors or self-limiting paradigms.
I think that's a great observation, because I think I will not try to limit myself whatsoever. There are no boundaries as far as I'm concerned.
Up to now, what's your proudest moment been?
Probably the 3 days my kids were born. Frankly.
3 days.
Mm-hmm. Although each of those days, I think is, and if it's from a professional perspective, it was probably the day I got our first major contract in the federal space.
Yeah. I think it's such a wonderful statement to put family first mm-hmm. and to do what you did for your children. What would you say to a young entrepreneur out there that's trying to make this decision right now? Family or business? Family or business?
I'm the balanced guy. I'd say do both, and do both 100%, frankly.
I mean, can it be done?
Yes.
You can't have it all.
I think I'm a testament. You may not have the best work-life balance. So, you know, I'm married to my family and I'm married to my business. That's really all the time I have, frankly.
If you could sell the company tomorrow, what would you do?
Start another one.
Well, gee, what a surprise. What's the website address, Daryl?
www.aprioinc.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Daryl Barrett, who's the founder and president of Aprio. I'd like to thank my co-host, Phil Horegi, with Saber Systems, and David Taylor with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. Hello, this is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is...
Anka Novakovic.
And Anka, who are you with?
EcoCoach, Inc.
EcoCoach, Inc. What is EcoCoach, Inc.?
We help businesses become more environmentally friendly, so we're a sustainability consulting company.
More environmentally friendly. Just exactly what does that mean to the novice?
Great question. Energy efficient, reducing waste, conserving water, greening procurement, a whole series of different things.
What makes your business special?
Well, we really believe in what we're doing, and we set out to help businesses not just help the environment but save money, because we understand that it's in this economic climate, it's really important for businesses, especially when they want to help out, to save money.
Okay. And why do you do this?
I really believe in essentially the outcome. Uh-huh. You know, I really believe that businesses can become more efficient, more energy efficient, improve their processes as well as
save money. Do you have a success story?
Yes, we have a few. There's one client that we worked with that, as a result of the work that we did, essentially made a few changes. One of the changes saved them $500,000.
Essentially. $500,000?
Yes. What they did was take their annual reports and put them online and email them to.
So you go throughout the entire organization looking for an eco-friendly way to run the business. Is that true?
Absolutely. It's mainly looking at business operations.
Great. Yes. How can someone get a hold of you?
You can contact us at ecocoach.com, so eco-coach.com, or give us a call at 202-559-0777.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Anka Novakovic.
Novakovic.
Novakovic, sorry, with a company called EcoCoach. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. And this is your host, Peter Schwartz, along with my co-host, David Taylor, with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, and Phil Horegi with Saber Systems. Joining us for this segment is a young man by the name of Tim Ross, who's the partner, Mid-Atlantic Regional Tax Services Leader, for a company called Clifton Gunderson. What is Clifton Gunderson, Tim?
Well, Clifton Gunderson's a large CPA firm, public accounting firm. We have about a little over 2,000 employees across the nation and 220 partners in 48 offices. And we do audit, tax, accounting, and focus on the middle market.
All right. A lot of accounting companies out there. What makes you unique?
I think our culture is more of a teaming aspect within our firm and with our clients. So we look at the business from a holistic standpoint, so that we're looking not just at tax or not just at accounting, but how everything fits together.
Say more about the teaming aspect. If I was watching, what would I be seeing?
You would see a lot of partners working together on the same clients. So versus some consulting firms or accounting firms, law firms, they tend to have partners that have their own little books of business, and that's what they manage. And our partners all work together, tend to specialize so that everyone adds a little bit to the pie.
When did you join the firm?
I joined the firm 7 years ago. In Indianapolis, Indiana.
Uh-huh. Why?
Well, because of the culture, because I was looking for a home, and I found it with Clifton Gunderson, and we were looking for a way to move from Detroit back to Indianapolis, and Clifton Gunderson, it just kind of accidentally found him.
Okay. What were you doing prior to that?
I was with PricewaterhouseCoopers in Detroit, and previous to that, I was with Ernst & Young.
So have you been in the accounting or tax business your entire life?
No, I haven't. Previous to accounting, I was a Marine for 11 years, and of course, college student at the same time. And previous to that, just a kid going through high school. So that was pretty much it.
Yes. Talk to us about the Marines. Why'd you join them?
I joined them because I went to Indiana State University for a semester and promptly flunked out. So sort of joined them on a whim, and it was a great thing that I did. I think that the Marine Corps was the turning point in my life where I sort of learned how to apply myself and from a discipline standpoint and a commitment standpoint.
When did you decide that tax would be a great career to have?
That was accidental. I was originally wanted to be a Marine officer and was in the PLC program at Indiana University, and just after Desert Storm Shield, found out that I got married 7 days before I left for Desert Storm Shield. When I came back, just the entire experience kind of showed me that from a marriage standpoint and a family standpoint, it just wasn't going to work. And it probably wouldn't have led to a successful marriage. So I had an accounting degree, so I ended up in accounting. And from a tax perspective, I got hired directly into tax by Ernst & Young. And I love it, and that's sort of
what do you love about it?
I like the I like looking at things in ways that, and then just asking the question, "What if?" So, for example, with a client situation, looking and saying, "What if we tried this, or have we thought of this?" and having that come out to a positive, not just experience, but a positive in cash or lower tax, a minimized tax for the client.
Mm-hmm. What were you like as a kid?
I was, we moved around a lot when I was a child, so I became very social oriented because I had to, because I moved 6 times as a child, so each time I had to make new friends wherever we moved to, and so I became pretty socially oriented. But I also, at the same time, spent a lot of time at home and by myself reading.
Yeah.
In high school, were there any turning points, would you say, that maybe changed the direction of your life?
Yeah. I wasn't the best student during high school, and probably not the best behaved child either. And when in high school, everyone's looking for what they're going to do, what college they're going to go to. I had no clue. I had no clue what I was going to do. I had no clue what the college was. I didn't even like school. So, and you know, as a senior in high school, you got to sit for the SAT, and so I sat for the SAT and scored a 960. And the night before, I'd been out until 2 in the morning and got up at 6 and then sat for the SAT and went and talked to my high school counselor. And my counselor, who was a older lady, said, you know, don't bother taking it again, and because evidently 960 was very low, and said, you should look at a vocational technical school, something like an auto mechanic. And went home, told my dad, and my father said, no, that's not going to happen. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take your keys. You're going to spend the night, Friday night, with me. You're going to sit for the exam again. And then I'll come and pick you up. And he did that, and I scored a 1260 on the SAT. So to me, that was a big turning point from the standpoint that it was someone telling me that there was something that I couldn't do, or that, to me at the time, it was even that I wasn't smart enough or I didn't even have the capability, and me trying to prove that person wrong. And that's kind of, it's kind of gone with me my entire life.
Yeah, you told us, you shared with us in the green room that you were diagnosed a few years back with ADD.
I was.
Talk about that.
I think if you look back at what I just, or you just think about what I just told you in regard to high school, and I wasn't the best student. I graduated with like a 2.223 grade point average from high school, and about 15 years ago, I was diagnosed with ADD. It all made sense. And
what made sense for you? Finally, the light went on. What happened?
It made sense that I was wired a little differently than other people. And ADD, and don't get me wrong, ADD is not it's an asset. It's not a detriment. There are just certain things that I have to do differently than other people. And
how is it an asset? You're one of the first people I've ever heard say that.
Because I have more, it gives you more energy. It gives you more, because you think differently. You think in different ways. You think from different angles. And from an energy perspective, I am a workaholic. I will admit that. So maybe that's part of it.
How are you using that knowledge to mentor other younger people?
I've recently become involved with College Success Foundation in D.C., and I do feel very strongly about this. That's an organization that takes business people, successful business people, and has them mentor inner-city D.C. kids, high school-age kids, help them get to the college level. And my big thing is that I grew up a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant kid. And I felt like I was being thrown away. If I was going to be thrown away as a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant kid, what's happening to African-American kids in D.C. or inner city anywhere? And so I feel very strongly about that. And that's my way of giving back.
There's a strong sense of social consciousness, I guess, that you have. I mean, not just from the ADD, but maybe from your collective experience as a child and maybe in the Marines. Does that influence, you know, how you work and how you approach client relationships?
I think that the one thing that the Marine Corps does is that it instills a strong sense of family and team in regard to the people that you served with. And that's definitely that's definitely been a strong theme that I like to think about. And if you think about what I do now as the leader in the Mid-Atlantic, to me we're a partnership. We have a partner a profit motive. But what's more important is the fact that we also have people that work for us, and those families depend upon us also. And to me, that's important. So it's not just the profit motive. It's just also understanding that there are people that count on us for their children's for the food and the housing that their children have. So, and that's actually a scary thing if you think about it. But that's a driving force in what I do now.
So it must have been a great relief to find out that you were wired a little differently when you got diagnosed with ADD. It's a whole different thing than actually growing up feeling like you're different. How did you manage to work through that as a young kid?
I don't know that I did as a young kid. I think the whole time, you know, I'm scoring high on these tests, but my grades are not reflecting that. So I grew up being told that I wasn't living up to my potential, which I wasn't, and I was lazy, which I wasn't. I just didn't learn the same way. Yeah. And I think the one thing that the military, the Marine Corps did for me is they taught me a way to learn. They taught me how to study. Nobody ever taught me how to study. I learned that in the Marine Corps. And I don't think that that's something that kids have to do now, because it's actually a recognized, ADD is recognized, and people work on it.
All right. What's the website address, Tim?
CliftonCPA.com.
Okay. We've been speaking with Tim Ross, who's the partner of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Tax Services leader for a company called Clifton Gunderson. I'd like to thank my co-host, Dave Taylor, with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, and Phil Horegi with Saber Systems. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a minute right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is
Lynette Spano.
And Lynette, who are you with?
I'm with SCI Consulting.
But you're not here to talk about SCI today, are you?
No, I'm not. talk about the new face of America.
And what is or who is the new face of America?
Well, it's a show that it's in a pilot stage right now, and we're marketing the pilot. It is it's a platform to host, for me to be the host, to talk about subjects and various different topics that affect modern-day Americans that include Hispanics.
So the new face of America is you, but it's also a people group, isn't that right?
Absolutely. There are 50 million Hispanics, documented Hispanics in the United States. And undocumented, we think there might be another 10 million. So it's imperative that there is a platform where from the experience of a Hispanic perspective that there can be, you know, the stories can be told about the accomplishments, the contributions that Hispanics and Latinos have made here in the United States.
Why is now the right time for this show?
The right time is now because contemporary Latino immigrants came in here in 1985 and 1989. Their children today are 20, 25, and 30 years old. And they all, their language is English. And so they all need a forum, a medium where they can tap into that is spoken again from the Hispanic experience.
Is there a business aspect to this? Is there market power behind this group?
Oh, absolutely. The purchasing power for Latinos in the United States they're talking $8 billion in purchasing power. The networks and the broadcasting networks are beginning to realize that it's a market that they've got to pay attention to.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Lynette Spano of SCI Consulting. She's the founder and CEO, but she's also the new face of America.
Absolutely.
This has been Mike Manning, your host with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, along with my co-hosts, David Taylor with Buchanan Ingersoll & Rooney, and Phil Horegi with Saber Systems. Joining us for this segment is a young lady by the name of Julie Hassett, who's the partner with Hassett Willis & Company. What is Hassett Willis, Julie?
Hassett Willis & Company is a boutique management consulting firm, and we're dedicated to performing the improvement. Improving the performance of our federal clients.
And in what way do you do that specifically?
Well, we provide really five core capabilities. We provide business strategy services, organizational effectiveness services, workforce improvement services, project and performance management, as well as stakeholder outreach.
When did the company get started?
We started in July of 2005.
Why start a company?
It was really timing, opportunity, and also the desire to do it that all kind of converged at the same time.
Say more about that.
Well, both my partner and I met on another client engagement. We were helping work through a pretty significant and complex large systems issue for the Office for Domestic Preparedness and Office of Justice Programs. Mm-hmm. We just decided that we really liked working together, and at the same time, the client that we were working for asked if I'd be interested in coming over to Department of Homeland Security.
Why do you think your company's so effective?
I think that we are able to bring kind of a multidisciplinary approach to problem solving. I think that we look at problems from many angles, you know, versus just kind of one root cause.
Uh-huh. And is that what you think you do better than anybody else, you personally?
Well, I'm biased, but yes.
Uh-huh. Where'd this skill start showing up?
Well, I probably attribute it to the fact that, you know, at a very early age, I started, you know, developing a skill in navigating complex organizations, you know, namely my family.
A couple more words, if you don't mind.
Well, my parents divorced when I was younger and both remarried, and I basically inherited step-siblings and half-siblings, and, you know, so you really have to start kind of navigating, you know, all of those different family systems at an early stage in life, and that theme followed me in terms of just being interested in organizations.
Go ahead.
So tell us a little bit more about, when you have a complex family relationships, I guess you're always trying to look to find the win-win, you know, and being sort of like that glue that keeps everybody together. So do you see yourself as being that glue to get everybody to find the common ground?
Yeah, I think defining the common ground and really trying to understand the big picture and think long-term, you know, is something that's really important when you're taking, you know, lots of different opinions and desires and goals, you know, and you're putting them all in the same pot. So, you know, I think that it's really important to stay big picture minded and then kind of working backwards through, you know, the particular issues.
And having developed at an early age this skill set for navigating complex systems, how did you, what formal educational background did you go into to perfect those skills?
Well, I was a psychology major in college, and then I got my master's degree in organizational behavior and development.
So why would somebody want to work for you?
Well, I think that, you know, we have a very dynamic company that, you know, we really believe in the mission of our clients. And, you know, I think we have a desire to make things better for them. And we are very much creative in our problem-solving approaches. And I think that, you know, we don't have, you know, the set way of doing doing things that I think can sometimes be the case in larger organizations. We really encourage creative thinking.
Yeah. How about for a younger person that isn't quite ready to make a bet on their future? Is that a good place to start with you?
I definitely think it is, because we have a lot of people that are more seasoned in their careers that have done a lot of time at larger companies and larger organizations. So, you know, we have perspective to lend from that angle, but also at the same time, when you're younger, you know, you don't, if you're in a larger organization, you don't necessarily get the exposure that you can get when you're in a smaller company. And so we definitely want people who are, you know, earlier in their careers to get earlier exposure to good work and exposure to clients, and we want to mentor them along the way.
So it's okay to be a youngster listening into this program, for example, and not have it all figured out.
Absolutely. I don't know if I have it all figured out.
Are you a mom as well as a business owner?
I am. I have a 5-year-old daughter.
So what's it like to start a business and raise a family all at the same time?
It's challenging. It's, you know, it was all I kind of knew. I didn't really have a choice. You know, I committed to both, you know, at the time that I committed to them. And so I think you kind of have to give yourself a break sometimes in terms of wanting to be a perfectionist at everything. I think, you know, as long as you can really prioritize and decide, you know, what's most important at that very moment and give attention to that, that's really the key.
Having the background that you have and now raising a 5-year-old daughter, what's the most important thing for you to impart on her as she grows up?
That's a great question. And my daughter just started kindergarten 2 weeks ago, and I'm kind of watching her go through that transition. I think that my biggest desire for her is that she's just not afraid to try things. You know, that really it's all about just trying and, you know, not being afraid to fail, because, you know, that's, I think, the biggest, you know, adjustment factor for somebody going into to school, that, you know, they, all of a sudden life is real and there's rules and there's lots of different people, and it can make you a little bit hesitant to try. But she, yeah, I don't want her to lose her desire to learn and to try.
Yeah. Has the economy impacted your company at all?
Well, it certainly made it a much more challenging environment in which to do business, obviously. I think we are luckily a company that has stayed very true to the consulting model in federal contracting, so that, you know, we haven't done a lot of work that involves augmenting, you know, certain functions within the government. We really provide solutions and projects. So because of that, we've been able to, I think, stay very relevant in right. during these times.
It's interesting. You're in the business of, I guess, bringing out the fun and dysfunction. But do you have a lot of internal debates about the direction and the future of the company and managing, you know, that dynamic and having and maybe hearing a lot of different paradigms?
I don't think I would say debate. I think we definitely have a lot of discussions about it, and it's something that you're always discussing, because you have to stay relevant, you have to be flexible, you have to adapt. I think what we have gotten very specific about is the core of what we offer, and that not changing. Where we offer it, where we focus our resources in terms of, going after new business, I mean, that definitely is something that is a continual discussion.
Talk about some of your early influences that shaped you in a positive way. People or events?
There have been many. I think from a entrepreneurial standpoint, my father was definitely instrumental in, being a model of someone who takes a lot of risks. My mother also was, incredibly resilient in how she sort of redefined her career. There's countless bosses that I had that, were just amazing mentors to me. And I probably would, say that it's the adults in my life when I was younger that really had a very they treated me as equals. They really listened. They wanted to make me feel like what I had to say was important, and that's something that I have really wanted to make sure that I integrate into how I work on a daily basis.
Looking back on it, what do you think is the most difficult thing you ever accomplished?
Adopting my daughter.
What was difficult about it?
Well, a lot. I think, one, you don't have any control. Two, it was a long wait. It was a 2.5 year wait. And you just really had to trust that everything would work out, and it did. But that was probably the most difficult.
How about your proudest moment up till now?
Adopting my daughter.
what do your mom and dad say about your success? Are they surprised?
I've never asked them. I think they're proud of me, but they don't act surprised. So, I think they've always believed that this is something that I could do, and they've always been very supportive.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I definitely, it's a very good question. I mean, I think that there's a lot of work that I have left to do in the company, and I really want to see us, thrive and grow. And so I see myself, in this position, but with the company, having diversified and, making sure that people have, fulfilling careers ahead of them. And right. That's, really what I see as my personal mission.
Great. What's the website address, Julie?
www.hassettwillis.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Julie Hassett, who's a partner with Hassett Willis & Company. We've had a terrific lineup of guests on our show today, including Louis Matrone, who's the president and COO of IMC, Daryl Britt, founder and president of Aprio, Tim Ross, partner, Mid-Atlantic Region Tax Services, leader for Clifton Gunderson, and finally Julie Hassett, who's a partner at Hassett Willis & Company. I'd like to thank my co-host David Taylor with Buchanan Ingersoll & Rooney and Phil Horegi for helping me structure the interviews today. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you we wouldn't have a show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Registration's now open for the 5th annual Old Town Doggy Walk to be held on Sunday, September 25th. This year's course takes in many of Old Town's famous sites, with a start and finish at Market Square on King Street. All proceeds from the walk benefit the furry, finned, and feathered residents of the Animal Welfare League of Alexandria. Registration costs $25 and includes a t-shirt and bandana. Online registration closes September 23rd, so be sure to enter today. To register or learn more, visit doggywalk.com.